the complete works of William Shakespeare, as told by... Tonight's episode, King Henry IV, Part 2. This is one melancholy play. Uneasy lies the head that wears the crown. Have we not heard the chimes at midnight? It's pretty much the story of the end of life, the sunset of life, both for King Henry IV and indeed for Falstaff. There's sort of a constant sense of the end of time having taken its toll and finished with these people, and we're just playing out the last little bits to sort of end our stories. It is really melancholy. King Henry IV, Part 2, written about 1597 to 1598. Pretty much it looks like it was written in concert with King Henry IV, Part 1, and leads almost directly into King Henry V, which I'll get to in a moment. The play opens with Rumor coming onto the stage and saying what effect the whisper down the lane can have on the populace. Basically, after King Henry IV, Part 1, Harry killed Hotspur, and now there's all kinds of rumors and innuendo going around, including, in fact, that Hotspur killed Harry. When we actually get to the rebels finding out that Hotspur had killed Harry, I mean, it seems like it's pretty up. And then the truth comes out, and finally, new messengers come in with the news that in fact Harry killed Hotspur, and it's not the best of things. We kind of go back and forth with Falstaff and his comedy elements back in the taverns and whatnot, and recruiting men to keep going with the rebellion, but. The main thing here is that it's the story of the end of King Henry IV, his reign, and almost all of it seems geared towards the idea of trying to wrap everything up for his son, because he sort of took the crown from Richard II, and so all of that bad blood that the rebels might have, if he can somehow resolve it before he dies, Harry will have an easier time, is what he's viewing it as. Despite the fact that Harry, after the end of Part 1, seems to have reverted somewhat to his old ways and is still sort of hanging about taverns, still dealing with Falstaff every once in a while as a joke, hiding amongst him the masses in cloak and disguise. You know, even Harry realizes, what am I doing? I really can't do this anymore. The Mistress Goodly, or the Hostess Goodly, says that Falstaff has eaten her out of house and home, and the Chief Justice tells Falstaff he has to make good on this sort of thing. He promised to marry her, and he owes money and all that sort of thing. It comes down to the fact that, interestingly enough, I'm flipping past here. Let me backtrack for just one second. Act 3, Scene 1 is a fantastic scene with the king talking about, you know, this is the uneasy lies the head that wears the crown, and what it means to have a prophecy that things were going to go badly when Richard II died. And there's a nice exchange that happens in which figuring the nature of the time's decease, the witch observed a man may prophesy with a near aim of the main chance of things as yet not come to life, which in their seeds and weak beginnings lie treasured. Such things become the hatch and brood of time, and by the necessary form of this, King Richard might create a perfect guess that great Northumberland, then false to him, would of that seed grow to a greater falseness. I mean, it's sort of a nice thing about how what goes around comes around, and it's not that hard to sort of pick out what's going to happen to people who betray or traitors to things. And a lot of it deals with death, and that everything dies, and everyone has debt to be paid to God, which is that everybody has a death to pay, and when does it come, and that sort of thing. Which leads into the, have we not heard the chimes at midnight? There's a parallel to Part 1 in Act 4, Scene 2, I guess, in which Lancaster goes to the rebels and says, the king's willing to deal, we could easily destroy you, but out of mercy we're willing to cut a deal. And the rebels amongst themselves say, you know, can we ever get out from under being rebels? You know, once we go down this path, if we do make peace, everyone's going to look at us with questioning eyes. And one of the rebels makes the point of, look, if we resolve this the way we're going to resolve this, we're not going to, it'll be fine, because we're going to make such demands that if they agree to that, we're going to be on Rocky Mountains or some such. So they agree. Lancaster comes back and says, we'll cut a deal, dismiss the armies, and we'll be done with this. So the rebels dismiss their armies, and Lancaster dismisses his armies, in air quotes. And his man comes back and says his men, Lancaster's men, stand ready until he dismisses them. Word comes back that the rebels' armies have taken to the hills and run away and been thrilled with the idea of it being resolved. Lancaster then arrests the rebels as traitors and resolves it that way. He's a good little prince, that guy. Falstaff, though, doesn't have any faith in him or belief in him, because the man doesn't drink enough and has a big monologue about sherries and why it's important to drink tougher things, stiffer things. At the end of Act 4, King Harry, or King Henry the Fourth, is near death, and Harry comes back to see him. And takes the crown and cries because he thinks his father's dead. His father awakens to find that the crown that he had set aside before he went to sleep is missing, and that Harry's gone, and that he, you know, rails against his son for being a screw-up and for being so eager to take the crown, and how disappointed he is, and how he's effectively killed him that way by disappointment. And Harry says, no, I was so overcome by the fact that this crown had killed you, and I tried to fight it the way that you would fight an enemy, and I can't believe this is happening, and if that's the case, I hope I lose the crown immediately. And King Henry IV recognizes that his son really has come around and is a good man, and so there's a nice little exchange between father and son, in which Henry IV advises his son that the way to take care of everything and to smooth everything over with the nobles and everything is to have a foreign war, go into the Holy Lands, fight a crusade, get the giddy minds focused on something else and distract them that way. Act 5 sees the coronation of King Henry V. Falstaff rushes back because he expects that he's going to be in good stead and is going to be, you know, huge in this court. He's going to be, you know, just everything's going to be, you know, roses. He gets there, and King Henry V effectively turns his back on him and says, if you reform yourself, you can come back to my court, but until then, you're banished. You know, the person I was is gone. And earlier there was a discussion that Harry was doing all this to sort of appreciate the commoners' perspective so that he could rule better as a king over them, though would be king, and so that's sort of where it's heading. The play ends with an epilogue from a dancer who pretty much says, you know what, this play, kind of long, kind of not so good, stick with me, King Henry V is next, we're really going to, you know, get into it, and I'll talk to you about Queen Catherine, and we'll go into France, and Falstaff will be back, even if you may not like him, he dies in the next one, sort of a summary type thing. There are, again, it's a really melancholy play, and a lot of the politics stuff doesn't always work because it's juxtaposed, I think, with the Falstaff stuff that doesn't always work for me. And so overall, the play is not a top choice for me, though, as I said, I mean, I appreciate what it's saying and I appreciate the melancholiness and the melancholiness. That's a real word, isn't it? The melancholy of the play. But overall, I got to say, not my favorite Henry play. I've said it. Not the best Henry play. That, of course, is King Henry VI, Part 3. But we'll see how King Henry V fares. I've actually read it before, and I'm not supposed to probably talk about that because these are the summaries, but whatever. I've read it before. St. Crispin's Day is coming, so that's the next one. Complete works of William Shakespeare, as told by me, Kevin Hanna. Oh, and one final quote. For in everything, the purpose must weigh with the folly. That's Shakespeare. He sure could write some dialogue, couldn't he?